There are shades of the same about this, aren't there, in some ways?
There are, in that, you know, obviously Gisèle Pellicot, who was the, who was the wife of Dominique Pellicot, who invited strangers to rape her in their home. He also, it was while she was, he drugged her. So again, this was abuse, sort of chemical submission, as they call it in France. So there's that thing. There is also a certain amount of anger amongst victims here, because obviously the Pellicot trial made global headlines. It was a huge thing. And I think a lot of victims are wondering why that this hasn't happened in this case, given the sheer number of victims. And because, although, you know, it was one man who's clearly a terrible pervert, the scandal here is that he was allowed to continue unabated for so long, despite a whole series of alerts that started at local level in a hospital, you know, where there was a whistleblower. I mean, it started back in 2004 when the FBI tipped off French authorities to say this man had been looking at child pornography and had paid for it. And he got off with a 4-month suspended sentence and was allowed to carry on, went back to work the next day. Nobody knew anything about it. Then when somebody found out about it, a doctor found out about it, again, the supervisory body, the medical council, they brought him in. Nothing was done. You know, it carried on like this. It made its way all the way up to the health ministry and still nothing happened. So obviously the victims are saying, what is going to change after this? And there's no commission that's been formed, and they're very worried that, you know, there could be other Joel Lusquin next, you know, out.
Yeah, almost inevitable, isn't it? And there are other Pellicots as well. It's almost inevitable. Dominique Pellicot, thank you, Henry, for speaking to us today. Henry Samuel, it's 3:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, police have been given more time to question a man arrested over the Liverpool Victory Parade collision. A 53-year-old is being held after a car was driven into a crowd in the city centre on Monday. At least 79 people were injured, 7 remain in hospital. Reporter Liam Gotting, who's in Liverpool, has the latest for LBC.
We know he's currently being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving and driving while unfit through drugs. Now, Merseyside police revealed yesterday that their current belief is that the car involved in the incident was able to get onto Water Street by following an ambulance through a roadblock which had been temporarily lifted.
A retired surgeon who admitted sexually abusing hundreds of children in France has been jailed for 20 years. Joël Lesquernuc, who's 74, was described by prosecutors as a devil in a white coat. He admitted attacking young patients in more than a dozen hospitals between 1989 and 2014. The Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner has rejected a claim by Britain's most senior police officer that prison reforms will lead to more crime. Some criminals could be released a third of the way through their jail terms as part of the changes in England and Wales. Met Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley says a review of sentencing was published without an assessment on the impact of forces. But Ms Rayner insists strict measures are in place to protect the public.
If people are well behaved and deemed not a risk, that they could be tagged and supported in the community. So it's not softening crime, it's about making sure we build the prisons we need, we've got the bobbies on the beat, and we're making sure that people are safe in their communities.
Israel's Prime Minister has announced that the senior Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar has been eliminated. Addressing Israel's parliament in the past hour, Benjamin Netanyahu included him on a list of the group's leaders killed in recent airstrikes. He was the younger brother of the former Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, who was killed by Israel's military last year. And a review has concluded that Heathrow made the right decision to close after a fire at a nearby electricity substation in March. More than 1,300 flights were impacted after the closure. The report, led by the former Transport Secretary Ruth Kelly, found alternative choices available to the airport would not have minimised disruption. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 14 points at 87.63. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places throughout the afternoon, feeling quite warm in that sunshine, highs of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Just a reminder that Merseyside police have been given extra time, not sure how much longer, to interview the driver of the car that ploughed into people in Liverpool at that, or at the end of that victory parade on Water Street in Liverpool. At yesterday's press conference, it was revealed the police they arrested him a few days ago, didn't they? They arrested him at the time. They've said they've arrested him on suspicion of being under the influence of drugs while driving. That was one of the things. Attempted murder was another, and dangerous driving was another. Now, of course, that investigation is still underway. He will have his day in court if he's charged. So we'll leave that to where it is. But in light of drugs being deemed by police, and I presume they've taken evidence of this in the course of their investigations, to have played a part in those events. And you know, I say that advisedly, but it is what the police have put out there in public. It prompted a conversation amongst some colleagues about how prevalent drug driving is over drink driving, and it is way more prevalent than I knew. And in surveys not that long ago, a couple of years I think it was, or a year or so ago, Liverpool had a particular problem. So much more drug driving than drink driving, for example, in terms of people who were arrested anyway and charged with it. And today, added to that story and that factor, is the possession of small quantities of cannabis. And I know, you know, cannabis is a very different drug to other kinds of much stronger drugs. But the possession of small quantities of cannabis for personal use should be, according to a report which has been backed by Sadiq Khan, should be decriminalised. And this is a report by the London Drugs Commission, chaired by the former Labour Cabinet Minister Lord Faulkner. We'll hear from him in just a second. It made 42 recommendations, including removing natural cannabis from the MDA, the Misuse of Drugs Act. This is what Lord Faulkner had to say.
This is an issue that the law has been dealing with for years and years and years, and they're perfectly able to make the distinction between people who've got it for personal use and people who've got it for dealing. We're proposing keep it criminal to deal in cannabis, but make it legal to possess cannabis. This is a very extensive study. We looked at lots and lots of places around the world. We heard from 200 witnesses. It was a really extensive study, and we were very struck by the fact that the law doesn't deter. A lot of people in numbers have real problems from cannabis use, so you don't want to encourage cannabis use, and you want to provide proper support for people, but criminalising people who possess it was a disproportionate and unhelpful thing to do. We looked around the world and saw that if you legalised it completely, including dealing, what happened then was you replaced big tobacco with big cannabis. And what big cannabis does, for quite understandable reasons, that's commercial people selling cannabis, is encourage people to take more cannabis or more people to take it. And that's not good. So the compromise that we've come up with is make it criminal to deal and make it legal to have possession. It also has a very significant improving effect on black community police relations.
So criminal to deal, legalise the use of. But if you're buying it, from a dealer, aren't you? Unless you're growing your own somewhere. When strictly speaking about cannabis. So if you are buying from someone, aren't you party to that deal? I don't know how that would work in law. And I've never taken any drugs. So you'll have to inform me about the impact cannabis and others, because I want to broaden our conversation out to more than just cannabis. But say, for example... and I'll go through some of these statistics that that emerged. It was the end of last year, actually. Nick Ferrari's programme looked at this, that the rate, they were collated from police forces across England and Wales, the rate at which drug driving incidences were happening. And I think this, just the reason I focus in on driving as well as drug use generally, is because of the events in Liverpool and the fact that the police have arrested a man on suspicion of, amongst other things, driving whilst impacted by drug taking. They didn't say which drug. if you have used drugs or you know someone who uses drugs and drives or has driven, might be you who did it, might be someone you know who did it, but even if it's not to do with driving, what impact, let's just take two drugs that we know are very prevalent out there, cannabis, cocaine. What's the difference in terms of their impact on your functionality, your human, your capacity to function as a rational, sane human being? What's their impact? Just to educate me a bit on this, 0345 6060973, the number to call. You can text 84850 as well. I'm going to talk in just a moment. He's a bit delayed, but we're going to talk to Steve Rolls, Senior Policy Analyst for the Transform Drug Policy Foundation, who's advised several governments on drug reform. But let me just talk you through some of these statistics that LBC found in December of last year. It was related to driving. Across England and Wales, these figures account. These are from police figures. Show that driving under the influence of drugs is now a bigger problem for some constabularies, some police forces, than drink driving. On Merseyside, for example, twice as many people were arrested for getting behind the wheel whilst having illegal substances in their system than for being over the alcohol limit. In just 3 years, nearly 7,000 people were arrested for drug driving across the Mersey region. Over a three-year period, the most of any force that responded to LBC's inquiries. One of the senior officers there who specialises in road policing for Merseyside Police told LBC at the time that drug detection has become a go-to skill. So an essential skill for his officers. It'd be great to hear from police on this. We do more, he says, than any other force in England and Wales. We buy more drug detection equipment and train all our officers to detect it. We're talking about common drugs, cannabis, cocaine, ketamine. We talked about ketamine just a week or so ago, didn't we? This is Chief Inspector Gavin Dixon, I'm quoting here. He says, he explained that there's no leeway in the amount of a substance you can have in your system before it becomes an offence. It's not like drink driving, he says, where you can have one or two and not be over the limit. Though he goes on to say, I'm not condoning that. Don't take drugs and drive. I don't even drink or drive. You know, people say you can have one small glass of wine. I can't. I know that sort of warm, cozy, relaxed feeling you get as soon as you've had a few sips of your wine. It's real. You know, I don't want to get behind the wheel of a car when my state has changed so quickly, not dramatically, but quickly. I don't want to be in charge of a vehicle when I've already, you know, in my own system experienced that state. Never taken drugs, so you're going to have to tell me the degree to which it differs. And again, I'm focusing on driving a bit, but it doesn't have to just be about driving because, you know, people do all kinds of things under the influence of drink or drugs. So are we right to start looking at the decriminalising of taking cannabis, but not the decriminalising of dealing it? You see, there's a bit of a grey area there if you buy from a dealer, isn't there? Because if you buy from a dealer, you're dealing. You're the other end of the deal. So I wonder whether you should still be prosecuted for that. You tell me what you think. 0345 6060 973. And you can educate me at the same time about the varying impacts these drugs would have on a person. And I know it might differ from person to person. Let's talk to John, who's called already from Kuala Lumpur. Hello, John.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you, yes.
Good. So I was just listening about the impact of different types of narcotics on the body, how you react to them. And I've got to say, I mean, I've not lived the most pious life, I have to say, over the years. I've probably tried most of the illegal products that are available through the marketplace, ranging from cannabis, cocaine, MDMA, ketamine. I'm a 55-year-old man. I've lived a life. But the one thing that I would say that you wouldn't want to be involved with would be alcohol, where personally I've had an issue with that over the years, but with the other things, not so much. So I wouldn't expect that anybody should drive under any influence of any type of product.
Including alcohol.
Alcohol is just the most awful thing that I've ever experienced. I have to be honest, and the one that's the most prevalent in the world. It's terrible. Mm. But in terms of, you know, tobacco and cannabis and cocaine, you wouldn't want anybody to do anything on that. But I guess the main observation is that when you see lots of young people or anybody kind of pour out of pubs and they start fighting, if you have the same thing when you go off to America or off to countries where you can actually legally smoke cannabis, you won't get anybody fighting. You might give each other a little bit of a cuddle, and you might go and get some food. But apart from that, you wouldn't see that. Cocaine is one, the other one that you mentioned. Mm. That has an unbelievable effect on your brain, where you become incredibly focused and sharp, energetic, talkative. You could probably drive one of those driving games that you play on the Xbox. You could be brilliant at that, but you wouldn't get behind the wheel. So they all have different stimulating effects or sedative effects. And quite frankly, they're all incredibly enjoyable. Mm. I don't do anything like that at all now. I do live a pious life now. But in my past...
Are you a monk?
I'm not a monk.
Do you live the life of a monk now?
Do you know what? You could probably say that. Yeah, I go to the gym 5 days a week and I exercise regularly. I don't eat red meat and drink water. How about that?
Good for you.
And yeah. Everyone's got to live their lives. But don't have what you like to do impact on other people. That's the most important thing. Do it in the privacy of your own home. Don't inflict your ways
so
and your wants.
So you're saying
people.
Whether it's cannabis, ketamine, cocaine, or a glass of wine or a pint of beer, do not get behind the wheel of a car.
Oh, Christ, no.
Not even a bit. Because you're allowed to a bit, aren't you, with wine or alcohol?
Well, why bother?
I agree with you. I agree with you. Why I just bother? Don't know anything about all the other drugs as to the impact they would have on you.
Well, what I would say is that if you're going to have a glass of wine and then you want to drive, okay, but why bother? Why take that small risk? Mm. Why do it?
Yeah.
Why do it? Because if you had an accident or you did hurt somebody, you'd probably spend the rest of your life thinking, if I hadn't done that.
Yes.
And the world's full of ifs and ands and pots and pans. Mm. You know, you just got to be right for other people.
If
you want your private life, don't do it to others.
If you had to grade those drugs that I mentioned, including alcohol, give me a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 on those. Go on.
Alcohol would be 100 out of 100 in terms of danger, risk, addiction, destruction of your own personal life and your family's and your career, if you have such a thing. It will be so far above the rest, it's frightening. I would then have, at the very bottom of the scale in terms of impact, I would have things like MDMA and cannabis. MDMA, as an example, is why they're using that to help with people with PTSD, as an example. Mm. I think, is it David Nutt, Professor David Nutt?
Yes.
You've probably heard of him. He did the most wonderful study on the impact of different narcotics, but nobody liked the answers within the UK government, so they got rid of him. I think people are afraid of things they don't understand, quite rightly. All things should be carefully managed, and you need to understand the risk of you using it, taking it, and the risk on other people.
And what you do when you take it, yeah. Thanks very much, John. Really good to hear your own impressions after experience of some, I think, of those drugs. Thanks very much, John. In Kuala Lumpur, it's 3:17.
LBC.
You could be a lotto millionaire like Terry. Get your ticket for tonight's draw. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off 6 or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores online, subject to availability. Exclude Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen.
Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk to Johnny in Horsham. Hello, Johnny.
Hi there. Yeah, so cannabis, on the decriminalisation of it, it would be a disastrous thing to do. I work and run men's circles and habitation circles for everything from addiction to poor mental health, mental wellness, and it's an absolute nightmare. But the question I always, because there's a thing called confirmation bias, you will always agree with your own behaviour. It's a habitation that we have inbuilt in us as humans. But I will always ask people in groups that are okay with what they're doing, if you had a child, and a lot of them do, and they're going to have surgery, would you be okay if the surgeon smoked a joint before they performed surgery on your child? I've never once ever met anybody go, yeah. If you're going to go on holiday and you saw the pilot smoking a joint before he flew the plane, would you be okay with it? Nobody says, yeah. We all are aware that these drugs aren't performance-enhancing drugs. They're performance-inhibiting drugs. And recreational use can be okay, but I'm not a practitioner. I'm actually at the coalface seeing the symptoms of what these things do. And I can categorically prove that it massively destroys well-being. It massively destroys your ability to maintain happiness. And it does cause addiction, because if you have dopamine by cocaine or by cannabis, without serotonin, your natural body's happy hormone in it, so if you're making yourself happy without your natural happy, it causes addiction every single time. But what I would urge you to do, and what I would urge your listeners to do, is Google the endocannabinoid system and a bliss hormone called anandamide that's in us naturally. The runner's high is anandamide, it isn't dopamine. And when you take cannabis, you naturally destroy your own ability to maintain stasis of natural happiness. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
So you kill your own joy?
Yeah, absolutely. If you imagine that you have a jigsaw puzzle and all the pictures, the whole pieces are blue, what cannabis does is it makes artificial pieces that look and feel like your endocannabinoid system, looks and feels like your natural bliss hormone, but it isn't. It's such in the same way that when you take antidepressants, SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they don't make you happy, it just takes away the feeling of being unhappy.
But it often takes away other feelings as well.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm working all the time with people that are C-suite leaders and 19-year-olds that are, you know, disastrous. If you use it recreationally, you know, so be it. But we cannot lie to ourselves about the consequences of doing it. And if you're driving a car and you had an accident, even if you had one joint and your child was injured, how could you ever possibly live with yourself knowing the outcome of what you've done?
Yeah.
Or
somebody else's child. I mean, even if you were stone cold sober, it would be hard to live with. But to think that you had done it to yourself and made yourself less capable would be horrendous, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I see it all day, every day. And confirmation bias means that we convince ourselves, it's the sort of thing that makes you go, I knew this would go wrong, right? I knew it would never work out for me. I knew I'd be fine. Your body's got an inbuilt survival mechanism. And confirmation bias means that you will tell yourself what you're doing is okay, and it will allow you to be participant in your own behavior. So asking somebody who uses cannabis recreationally is okay, it's a bit like asking somebody if it's okay to breathe. It's a pointless endeavour. Decriminalising it would be a stupid thing to do.
And do you think, as I've suggested, I'm not entirely sure what I think, but the idea that, you know, keep the criminality for dealing but not for using. If you buy from a dealer, you're dealing, aren't you? You're in the deal.
Yeah,
I know you're not dealing out, but you're dealing, and you're giving you're supporting a market of dealing.
Yeah, absolutely, you are. But then it still comes down to the analogy of alcohol. If you're the type of person that goes and has a pint once in a blue moon with your friends, you're okay. But is whether it becomes habitual, and the habitual nature comes to what's going on in your own chemistry in your body. We have to allow people to be adults, and you know, decriminalising isn't going to help that. You know, it isn't by any means a gateway drug, but it certainly isn't a performance-enhancing drug. It inhibits people.
Thanks very much, Johnny, if you're called Johnny in Horsham. Let's hear from Simon in Southend. How do you see it, Simon?
Oh, yeah. I moved into Southend about 5 years ago, and it's readily available and used by a lot of people in the area. Me personally, I can't smoke tobacco because I've had cancer twice. I'm recovered now. So I vape cannabis when I use it. I think there are dangers with using it, but it has a lot less negative effect than alcohol.
What do you use it for?
And I use it as some people might have, like, an after-work drink, or I use it to, like, wind down on a weekend. Mm. I don't use it every single day. I don't like alcohol, so I don't use that anymore. But it's only when I moved into the area that I saw how freely available it is. I mean, during lockdown, it was incredibly easy to get hold of. And just a lot of people on my street, once they found out that you smoke it, people would actually say, oh, do you need any? You know, it's quite easy to obtain. And some people have negative experiences on it, but not everybody is the same. It's not one size fits all.
No, people's bodies react differently to certain things, don't they? Would you ever drive?
I think for a lot of people, they because of how they take it, when they're rolling joints and you have the tobacco, that has an element of danger to it as well. But there are other ways to ingest it.
What's the danger with tobacco?
Well, tobacco makes it more addictive. Tobacco is very addictive anyway. And also, a lot of the time when you're smoking tobacco, if you roll a joint, you don't have a proper filter. There's a risk there.
Would you ever drive on a small amount of cannabis?
No, to me it's the same as drink driving. You shouldn't drive under the influence of anything.
Although drink driving is, a bit of it is legal, isn't it?
Maybe, but I wouldn't get in the car with someone that's had a drink.
No, me neither. Thank you very much, Simon, for your call. Simon in Southend. Mark's call from Leicester. Hello, Mark.
Hiya.
What did you want to say, Mark?
So there's one kind of drug that's kind of that's swept under the radar, which is nitrous oxide. And there's a lot of 18 to 24-year-olds that go driving under the influence. So me personally, I was addicted to that drug 5 years ago, back when it wasn't illegal. And from personal experience, when you're driving, you're pretty much like your legs. You can't really move your legs like that. So if you drive and let's just say there's a child that walks past and you're going to have to emergency brake, it doesn't, your legs won't react as quick. So when people say that, like drinking and smoking weed and also nitrous oxide, that's pretty much swept under the radar. It's just like, if you do that and drive, it's just like you're going to be in a situation where, let's just say, you're going to have a complete quick reaction on certain stuff. And if you can't do that, you're pretty much going to, you might end up costing someone's life, basically.
And how common is it in your circles, Mark?
Well, nitrous oxide is very, very common, literally in the Midlands area especially. There's a lot of car crashes, and you see the nitrous oxide like tank that's in the car. And there's a lot of car accidents if you go on social media, and the main cause is that. So I just go around and then spread awareness in schools and after school clubs to kind of try to tell people how it can affect you.
Because possession of it is illegal now, isn't it? And repeat offenders even more so, as in face longer sentences.
Correct. But it wasn't like that five, 6 years ago. And then, like, for example, if you go to a corner shop, they will give it to you. That's how kind of common it was a year ago now. It was very common. Like, you go to a shop and you ask them for that, and they pretty much give you for 20 quid.
And because I used to see those little capsules around. This is laughing gas we're talking about, isn't it?
Or yes, so that's correct, yes.
I used to see those little capsules around all the time.
Yeah, it's literally, if you go to an area, let's just say schools, and there's like, if you go around like corners, you'll definitely see it. And if a kid sees how common it is and how it's just lying around the floor, then just imagine what they think, and like they'll think it's okay to do it, so that's pretty much dangerous, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Thank you, Mark, for your call. We'll hear from James after the headlines on this. In fact, no, I think we can hear from James now. Hi, James.
Hi, are you okay?
Hi, yes, yeah. You take cannabis medically?
Yeah, I'm a medical patient for cannabis. So the laws about it is just a bit in and out. So by our prescriptions, we are allowed to drive as long as you are not visually impaired. But, you know, the police have a different thought about it. So all the cases that I have read, they all have been dropped, NFA'd, when they go down to court. I was just thinking, what are you guys' thoughts about that? And is there any clarification about that?
I don't know. I'll try and find out what the... I mean, if the police are assuming cannabis, and I think they do assume, they take the position that it's a Class B drug and they have to take action on it, then it is. Whether it's... what when you're taking it medicinally, do you limit the kind of activities you do?
Yes, we do. So we only take it, and then you have to... we wait up to 10 hours before you're legally allowed to drive. But you are told by your doctor that you are legally allowed to drive. Even the DVLA are aware of it. The only ones that seem to have the problem is the police. But at the end of it, the case ends up getting dropped off. Mm. But as the patient yourself, you go through more stress with the police than anything else, and makes your conditions a lot worse.
Yeah, we have to get better at this, don't we? I mean, we've had this conversation many times about medicinal use of cannabis, particularly for children with seizures and some adults with seizures as well. But I'm not sure. I don't know what your condition is. But thank you very much for your call. It's something we certainly need to get a bit better at. Thank you, James, for your call. James in Tooting. It's 3:31. Time for some headlines from Amelia Cox.
Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after a car was driven into people at Liverpool's Premier League title parade. A 53-year-old is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous and drug driving. A retired surgeon who admitted sexually abusing hundreds of children in France has been jailed for 20 years. Joel Lesquanuc, who's 74, admitted attacking young patients between 1989 and 2014. And Israel's Prime Minister has announced the senior Hamas leader, Mohammed Sinwar, has been eliminated. Benjamin Netanyahu included him on a list of the group's leaders killed in recent airstrikes. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, highs of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver, and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Hillary's mid-season sale just got even better. Get up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's 10% off all blinds, curtains and shutters. And an extra 10% off our new range of awnings and pergolas, with measuring and fitting always included. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. Hurry! Hillary's extra 10% off everything must end 2nd of June. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message Sheila Fogarty on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
And now, before I get back to your calls on this whole question of drugs, whether we should legalise or decriminalise some of them, and the degree to which, mainly, I need you to tell me, because I don't know very much about them in terms of the impact they have on your body and your capacity to do things. You've been telling me your own experiences of that, your take on that. We'll get to it again in a second. Before that, though, I want to talk about this story that we've been discussing on and off throughout the day on LBC, the parents of a baby boy who died at the age of just 15 weeks after living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. That was their word, the survey. They've told LBC News they now believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. And we've been here before, haven't we, with another little boy. An inquest for the baby, Akram, will take place in August. At Notting Hill Genesis, the housing association which managed the property, say they're working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations. Now, I should give you a bit of a warning before we hear from our reporter Helen Hoddenott on this. There are some distressing details about the harm done to a little baby. Helen, remind us of the background to all of this, if you would.
So, Sheila, at the heart of this story are two parents reeling with grief and shock. Their son, Akram, was born in November last year, but in February, at just 15 weeks old, he died. I went to go and see his mum, Ayat, and his dad, Abdishafi. They're both originally from Sudan, but have been living in northwest London for years. I went to go and see them next to the block of flats where they used to live, and Ayat told me about her memories of her son.
When he was months old, he started to laugh with me, and even we used to listen to music together. We had a song that we always listened to together.
Now, Sheila, home for the Mohammeds, a family of five, was a one-bed flat in Hampstead. It was owned by Notting Hill Genesis. And as you say, that independent survey carried out last year deemed it uninhabitable. The Housing Association has said they're deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. They say they're working with relevant authorities and that no determination has been made by the coroner as to the cause of death. Now, I visited the flat last month. The family has been moved into temporary accommodation, but in the flat there was mould on the walls and a smell of damp in the air. Abdishafi, Akram's dad, along with legal advocates and his older children's head teacher, had been raising concern about disrepair in the flat since 2023. Savas Panas is from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people. He had been contacting the Housing Association, claiming the condition of the flat was affecting the family's health.
Everything that I could get, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please prioritise this family.
Now, Notting Hill Genesis told LBC a thorough mould wash was carried out in September last year, but 3 months later, that independent report found mould in every room. In February, Akram's mum took him to the GP with breathing problems. They were sent home, told that he would probably grow out of it. But the next morning, Akram was unresponsive. His parents rushed him to A&E, but he died despite doctors' best efforts. His mum, Ayat, told me about that horrific day.
They tried to do the CPR, they tried to do those sort of things, medical terms that I never heard about. And it was so scary. Eventually, they stopped doing what they're doing. And they said, OK, we can't do them anymore because he's dead. Your son is dead. Actually, I didn't believe them. I didn't understand. No, he'll be okay. He'll be okay. Please, can you try again?
That's just heartbreaking, isn't it? And anyone would ask, any mother in particular would ask the same question, to keep trying. It does bring back memories of our Abhishek, the little boy in Rochdale, who died from a respiratory condition which was deemed to have been caused by exposure to mould at his home. The inquest found that. Do we know yet anything about Akram's cause of death?
So, and just, you know, we were listening to Ayat just then. When she was speaking to me, she was holding a sweater, a little jumper, and kind of holding it to her face. And that was what Akram had been wearing the night before he died. And obviously she was just overcome by emotion, recounting all of that. The official cause of Akram's death will be determined at the inquest, but the results of a pathology report shared with LBC by the family solicitor showed he died from late onset group B strep, which caused acute pneumonia. Experts tell us that is not caused by mold, but say that poor living conditions can, in some cases, lower a baby's immune system, which would, of course, then make them potentially more susceptible to serious infection. But while these full answers from the inquest are pending, Akram's dad, Abdishafi, has told us he believes the condition of their home did contribute to his son's death.
And I mentioned Awab. The government's faced some criticism, hasn't it, for delaying the full implementation of so-called Awab's law, which would force social landlords to address issues with specific timeframes as well. Because as you say, you know, there's a reason we all like to live in dry, safe homes, and it's to stay well and be protected from the elements. And, you know, it stands to reason, really, that if you don't, you're going to be exposed to whatever those elements are.
Yeah, and it was in February, which was the same month that Akram died, that the government announced that the full implementation of Awab's law would be delayed to 2027. But the rollout of it does start in October. That is when social landlords will be forced by the law to fix dangerous and damp mould within a set time period. Deborah Garvey is the policy manager at Shelter and has told LBC they were hoping for swifter action.
We are disappointed that it's going to take so long to implement. If there are delays, then that can represent a real danger to the health and safety of tenants.
Now, the government says Akram's case is a devastating tragedy, but it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest. The inquest is happening in August, when, of course, there will be full answers provided to a lot of these questions.
But I think an awful lot of people are going to be looking at that, not just because of this awful case, but because we know that loads of social housing is full of damp and mould, and undealt with damp and mould. So there'll be an awful lot of eyes on that. Thank you very much indeed, Helen, for coming in with that. Helen Hoddenott, LBC's reporter. Let's get back to your calls on drug use. A lot of you want to talk about alcohol in this mix as well. This is after a report which is supported by Sadiq Khan, suggests that cannabis use should be decriminalised, not the dealing of it, but the use of it. Not all of you are convinced. Jimmy has called from Southend. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Sheila. Thank you for taking my call.
Where do you come at this story from?
So this subject is very close to my heart. I am a recovering addict and alcoholic, and my story started with cannabis use. Now, the cannabis use led me to all sorts of criminal activities, for which I had my house raided, my car impounded, and I had to move from where I was living. I had to move from that because I was being sort of hunted down by drug dealers, if you like. Now, I live in Southend, and I've only got to walk down the high street, and there's families, they're pushing buggies with their toddlers in, and there's people just blatantly smoking a joint in front of them. It's going in the faces of the kids, of the parents. I think it might not be a gateway drug for everybody. It certainly was for me. I don't agree with it being decriminalised. I think there needs to be, because it kind of, it gets to the root of other problems. Cannabis is maybe, for a lot of people, and I know because I've been in a rehabilitation facility, I'm in the rooms of AA, I'm surrounded by addicts and cannabis users that are addicts. And it all boils down to the same thing. It all gets to the root of the problem, which basically is drugs, drug dealers. I don't know a drug dealer that actually takes his own drugs. He doesn't use them.
Really?
Because of what's in them. The people that I've met in rehab that I went to, which basically saved my life, are all addicted to this, to cannabis, to heroin, to... You've only got to walk through South End of an evening, and it's like watching a series of The Walking Dead. People are just zombified by whatever it is they're taking, and it's And it's close to my heart because obviously I've been there. I've had my life wrecked, ruined, and I've been on my knees, predominantly with alcohol.
Have you come back, Jimmy? Have you come back from it?
Yes, I'm recovering now. So good. I'm 16 months sober.
Good for you.
But I know a lot of people who are cannabis users and they've gone on and they've got involved with other things because it's almost like a bit of a, how can I, like a hierarchy. They think that they're powerful, that they're gangsterish because they know dealers and they know this and they know that and they're getting in all sorts of trouble. And when I see parents and families on South End Seafront that are just going out for a stroll along the seafront and there's groups of predominantly younger people, I would say, that are just blatantly smoking it in their faces. And I've pulled people up before and they've just told me to mind my own business and sod off, basically. But I think to decriminalise it would possibly then let people that are doing harder stuff and even sort of serving harder stuff and people that aren't and maybe want to get into it, it might give them a gateway and think, hang on, I can get away with this. Because the police in Southend have got their... They're up against it. They really are. I see it all the time. All the time. It's a drug-related death. It's a drug-related accident in a car. You know, I really don't think it should be decriminalised. I don't think there's a... Unless you've lived that life and you've seen it for what it can actually do, I don't really think you should have a say on it.
Well, this is why I benefit so much from speaking to people like you, Jimmy, and others, even if they make a different conclusion to you, because I have no experience of it. But I do have experience of speaking to, for example, in this very studio, a man whose two young sons at university in separate incidents took their own lives whilst using cannabis.
Yeah, cannabis caused me... Sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Caused me psychosis. I was... From the age of 13, I was smoking it heavy like cigarettes. I was on all sorts of antidepressants afterwards because I was having panic attacks, anxiety attacks. And actually, what I started using it for was going against me. I was using it to calm myself down and sleep. Actually, it had the opposite effect, exactly like alcohol. Because people that take drugs, and I know this, and use substance, it's because they want to come out of themselves. They don't like the way they feel. They want to change the way they feel because they can't deal with their emotions. Now, that might not be for everyone, but it's certainly in the 16 months that I've been in recovery. And with gamblers as well, and I'm going off the rails a bit, but I just think that anything that takes you out of yourself might not be suitable for the general public. It shouldn't be decriminalised. There's a problem there that needs addressing, and that... Cannabis, for me, was the root of my problem, which led to a spree of other things.
And you're not even talking about whether a person should drive with it. You're just saying, be careful what it will do to you. Yeah,
No, I had my licence revoked in 2013 for drink driving. But you see signs everywhere. When you're driving on the road, don't think. It says think. Don't drug and drink drive. It's as simple as that. And like the previous callers have said, if I had caused an accident, luckily I didn't. Luckily, I didn't. But if I had caused an accident from smoking a joint, which people seem to think is a simple and not such a bad thing, and it's not as bad as alcohol, I guess, I'd be.
And that might depend on the person. It sounds like for some people it does. For some people, alcohol was their undoing in a way that cannabis wasn't.
Yes, alcohol brought me to my knees. But I do believe that the start of my story was taking cannabis because I didn't like the feelings I was having as a teenager. I wanted to get out of myself.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. And I'll tell you another thing, Sheila, I was also addicted to prescription opioids.
Wow.
Which I got freely, which were legal, and I got them freely from my doctors, my pharmacy. I was prescribed them and I was abusing them and I told the doctors that I was abusing them and I was allowed to carry on abusing them. I was just told to, you know, cut down whatever. I think... Like, and the other gentleman says, where he holds groups for men and maybe women as well.
Yeah,
that for me was the start of my the gateway to my addiction, should I say?
Well, listen, I really wish you well with your continued recovery, Jimmy. It sounds like you've
got
a new understanding of things, and I hope that is sustainable. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Sheila. I hope that was useful. Thank
it really you. Was. It really was. Thank you very much. That's Jimmy in Southend. You too. Jimmy in Southend is 3:48.
Coming up at 4 on LBC, Ben Kentish.
The number of school children needing help with special needs is up 140% in the last 10 years alone. What's going on and what are we going to do about it?
Ben Kentish on LBC. For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Andrew says the obvious but unmentioned option is for the government to sell the drugs and tax them. In doing so, the purity of what's being sold can be assured. The criminality of what's being done, including the modern slavery, can be minimised. The relationship with users can be developed. And the connection between cannabis and drugs that take over your life, like heroin and cocaine, can be diminished, says Andrew. Joshua has called from Birmingham. Hi, Joshua.
Oh, hello, Sheila. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Yeah, you were a daily cannabis user.
Yes, from my teenage years, during which time I finished my schooling, went to university, got a degree, started and continued a career. And I just wanted to point out that correlation isn't always causation. People talk about cannabis being a gateway drug to harder drugs. My father used to say, he was also a cannabis user, he used to say that the worst thing that everyone starts on is their mother's milk, because it leads to everything else in their life. And also that cannabis works in a different way to a lot of other drugs like alcohol or other narcotics that actually force your body to feel a certain way. Cannabis activates receptors on the brain to give you a euphoric feeling. If you're using habitually, those receptors don't have time to reset, so you don't actually get as high. So somebody who uses daily could have five times the amount of cannabis in their system as someone who's using it for the first time, but the person using it for the first time will be five times higher.
Well, can you say that definitively? Doesn't this depend on individuals? Because our previous caller, well, you know, just
different.
Yeah, and also what it does to an individual person's life is different, isn't it? Our previous caller was clearly telling us that it had ruined his.
Yeah, well, some people do have addictive personalities, but that isn't necessarily the problem from cannabis. That's the problem for their own psychology and their own genetic makeup or their own life experience leading up to the point where they started using something. You know, he also pointed out that he was addicted to alcohol and used opioids. You know, things that I've never had trouble with. I'm, I've, and I just wanted to point out that although his experiences, I'm not saying they're false or untrue, they're not necessarily typical or definitive of cannabis. And relating it back to your earlier topic about policing and jails, if cannabis was legalised, sold freely and taxed, and all the cannabis offenders released, you would create prison spaces, raise revenue, reduce stress on the police force, just like is happening in many US states.
But what would it do
in many foreign countries?
That might be the case, but what would it do to people? You know, Joshua, not everybody would react to it the way you do.
No, that's quite true. But I mean, education can go a long way on that, and a lot of it is moderation and thinking about. You know, I was advised by my father, who was a cannabis user as well, that you know, don't smoke at work, don't smoke at school, don't smoke at university. Wait till you've done your homework, and then when you finish at the end of the day, before you go to bed, feel free, fill your boots. Not a problem.
Fill your boots. Thank you, Joshua. Joshua in Birmingham. Let's hear from Dave in Southampton. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Sheila. Just a point on decriminalisation. I'm in my 30s now. When I was a teenager, sort of 18 and under, I personally found it harder to get hold of alcohol than I did drugs. Because to get alcohol, you'd have to get someone else to go and buy it for you. And that wasn't always that easy.
Did you?
It wasn't always that easy to get someone to go and buy you alcohol. Because they're taking a risk themselves. So you'd have to hang around outside the shops and say, oh, you know, you couldn't go and get me some alcohol, could you? And that was actually harder than it was to just go and buy some drugs from someone. Because drug dealer, they don't care who they're going to sell to, do they? So they don't care what age you are. So I think that decriminalisation and regulation does work.
Did you take both in your teens or your youth?
Yes. Yeah.
It's all right, I'm not the police. You can say more than that.
I've never been a big drinker. I do smoke cannabis. And that's about it, really. But obviously, if you go and buy weed from someone, quite often they'd say, oh, you know, I've also got this. Do you want some of that? Do you want some of this? Do you want some of that? So it's, with regards to decriminalisation and regulation, I think that it does work in controlling it.
And do you do it now still?
I do smoke cannabis, yeah. I vape it. I did used to smoke tobacco, and going back to one of your previous callers, they said that tobacco makes it more addictive, and I agree with that. I think I'd recommend anyone that does smoke tobacco and cannabis, I'd recommend to seriously give up the tobacco.
Do you take anything now still?
Yeah, I vape cannabis.
And you get it from what, a regular dealer that you're confident of?
Yeah.
You are answering questions like I'm a copper, Dave. I'm not. We're not going to have you prosecuted. Please don't worry. Thanks for your call. Thanks very much, Dave. James in Woking, what's your take?
Hi there. Give me one second. I'm just sorting this honey up. Thanks very much. Hi. So I wanted to say the point that you haven't brought up yet, going back to the driving under the influence. So I wanted to say that, so with alcohol, if you're having a drink, let's say it's a Friday night, you're having a drink and you get in the car, that's bad. But in the morning, if you're doing it as well, it will still be in your system. I feel like with cannabis, it stays in your system for almost a month. So, for example, I went on holiday to Thailand over the summer last year, and I was really nervous coming back and, you know, driving to work, even the month of me being back, because I knew it stayed in my system for the longest time. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think cocaine lasts in your system for a week, but weed definitely stays in your system for the longest time. So let's say someone who smokes once a month, every month of the year, if they ever get drug tested while driving, they will fail it 99% of the time.
Were you remotely surprised to hear of the drug driving statistics that I alluded to?
Was it just Liverpool that had 7,000? Is that what was said?
That was the Liverpool example, but there were loads of regions that had high higher levels of drug driving than drink driving, just not quite to that degree as Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I'm not really surprised, no. I feel like if you were going to class, you know, if you're going to group them together, I'd probably label alcohol and cocaine in the same bracket, because I feel like they give you more confidence. And let's say you're with a group of your mates and, you know, you're under the influence or either of those, you feel like they're egging you on and, you know, everything's going great. So you speed, so you don't check corners and things like that. But I think that with cannabis, it definitely slows your reaction time as well. So if you throw someone a tennis ball, let's say a stoner a tennis ball, they'll probably drop it. So if to trust them behind the wheel is just as bad. But maybe I think if you get 0.001 on a blow test of any drug, it's automatically driving under the influence. But let's say I smoked weed 3 weeks ago, it wouldn't have the same effect as if I was driving straight after.
So much more dangerous, you'd say?
Yeah, much more dangerous with, you kind of get a scale of how much is in your system from that blow test. I think maybe if we have one for alcohol, say you can have a drink or two or be under a certain level. I mean, if you're going to introduce this new weed policy saying people can legally carry it, I think that the numbers of drivers are going to go up. So maybe in the future, you'd have to put in a 0.05 of cannabis, which means what, maybe they smoked a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's the time. It's the difference in the time scale, isn't it? The retention of the effects. Thank you very much, James, for your call. James in Woking. That is it from me for today. Thank you very much for your company. You can download the all-new official LBC app, remember, for free from your app store right now. Coming up at 7 on LBC, it's Ian Dale, but now it's time for Ben Kentish.
Sheila, thank you very much indeed. Hello. Afternoon at 4 o'clock.
It's like 25 different thoughts of what to do in that exact moment all happening at once.
A quite incredible increase in the number of school children being diagnosed with special needs.